Chapter 10. The sight through the strange train window was breathtaking. Night had fallen over Terre, and now that we were clearly on the eastern side of the island's inhospitable cliffs, it was like a completely different planet. Where we had mostly been hiking along barren rocky paths and in between jagged spires, we seemed to now be traversing a lush valley swathed in indigo heather. Neon green fireflies winked in and out past the window as whatever locomotive we were on marched forward. Also, it seemed to be flowing a swift river uphill, and if I stuck my head outside, I could see a large waterfall in the distance. This vantage point also allowed me to see what this so-called train beast looked like from the outside. From what I could tell, the creature itself was a giant millipede-like animal complete with dozens of marching legs that rose and fell in a synchronized wave. The cars, like the caboose I was apparently situated in, were lashed to its back with an interesting and complicated combination of metal gears and intricately knotted ropes. Each segment of the train was connected with more ropes to create bridges, and the bridges themselves were surrounded by safety netting to prevent people from falling off as they moved from car to car. Especially because it seemed all of Terre was either always climbing up or going down depending on perspective, and I was sure nothing would be able to stop rolling downhill once it started. "This is a masterpiece, Ciskern," I remarked, as I stood shoulder to shoulder with the newly minted Terran regent in front of the glassless window. A temperate breeze wafted in that smelled rich and loamy like peat, but it wasn't a bad smell despite how strong it was. "Thank you for inviting me, us, to your home." Zoe and Shay took that as their cue to come up next to me on my other side so they could peer through the window as well, and by their wide eyes and gasps of delight, I could tell they were excited about being here now that we weren't in constant fear of our lives.
"I should hope it will start to feel like a secondary home to you in time," Ciskern said. "Please, dress, and then meet me in the next car, so I can show you to where you and your family will be staying. The journey only takes a day, so we will be at the palace sometime tomorrow."
"Okay," I said, and went to reach for the bundle of clothes. "I won't be long." Ciskern dipped his head and then left through the door he came from.
"There is also a wash basin and a jug of warm water,"
Shay said, as she brought out both items from under the bed.
"These jugs are called fire gourds, and once the boiling juices have been emptied, the gourd itself is useful for holding hot liquids of all sorts."
As she talked, she went about uncorking the bright yellow squash thing with the long neck and filled the basin at her feet.
"How is your leg?"
Zoe asked as she helped me take off my ripped and dirty clothes. "It feels fine, but a little weak," I commented as I used the Catwoman's shoulder for balance. There was a tremor of fatigue coursing through my injured limb. But other than that and the weird numbing sensation, the injury itself was only a flesh wound. Why did this almost kill me?
"Apparently, the squalors have a venom on their large claws that prevent the blood from clotting,"
Zoe said, as she took one of the damp cloths from Shay.
"You were lucky Nemus knew about black moss, and if Rylan hadn't found some with Gelf, you wouldn't have survived the time it would have taken to walk to the train beast."
I lapsed into silence at this, since I was still feeling the effects from the time stop and the blood loss, probably. So I just let myself drift under the tender care of my wives. Part of me wanted distance from yet another reminder of how close I'd come to losing it all. The good, no, great thing, was my wives were very skilled at making me forget about my mortality. And if it weren't for the blood loss, I would have tried to steer this rub down into more amorous territory. Instead, I surrendered myself at the altar of their tender, loving care. After as much of the grime and dried blood was rinsed away as possible, Shay and Zoe then guided me to sit on the side of the bed while they started to massage some sort of fragrant oil that reminded me of cedarwood into my aching muscles. Shay massaged my blistered feet and sore legs with her mindful healing touch, while Zoe's long and delicious legs bracketed my bare hips on the bed behind me. The Catwoman's toned body was clothed in a low-cut silk dress the color of deep amethyst, and it draped around us both as she cradled me against her hips. Her skilled warrior's hands were still soft and feminine, yet they had a surprising amount of strength when she dug them into the tight knots along my shoulders and the base of my neck. I groaned, bowed my head, and gave her more access to my neck. It was erotic, feeling their hands on my body, but it was more of a low-burning arousal I was happy to just let simmer on low, like cooking a good stock. The intimacy and sheer affection I could feel pouring over me from both of my wives was the real meal this time, and I soaked up the way Zoe focused her attention on the tension right behind my ears because she knew how to read me. And I let myself get lost in the way Shay was so careful around every cut and bruise as she soothed the aches away with that potent salve she'd learned to make from Madame Midgeon. Both of them were a portrait of love in action, and being the center of their devotion never failed to stagger me. The feeling never faded, and just like the tide returned to the shore time and time again, I knew it never would. Steadfast. They were my roots, and they were the final pieces I needed to feel at least 90% restored. The last 10% was nothing that couldn't be fixed with the clean, loose-fitting clothes Siskern gave me, and the promise of a hot meal in the near future. "How do I look?" I asked my wives, as I smoothed my hands down the sleeves of the basic black vest and shirt combo.
"Very handsome,"
Shay giggled as I twirled her around so her bright orange dress would bell out around her like a poppy.
"Come, Siskern is waiting."
Siskern grinned when we met up with him in a car that looked like it was the laundry room based on the stack of wooden washbins and shelves of folded linens, and we followed him into one of the passenger cars. Now that we were in the train proper, the luxury and elegance was apparent in the warm wood paneling carved with intricate designs. A multitude of different woods were used to create dramatic shading effects, and there were quite a bit of carvings and mosaics that depicted symbols and images I was familiar with from Nada. Things like the Brea Shield, which was a silver comet that eclipsed the moon once a year, and of course the deep-sea leviathans, those damn sacred fish. Then Siskern showed us to the suite where most of us were staying, and the opulence only seemed to increase. For starters, the suite was huge, and it had a lofted design which made it possible to have a room for Zoe, Shay, and me while also having space for four to fill the set of bunk beds, and anyone else who had a bedroll could crash on the floor. Currently, Rylan, Gelf, Nemus, and Jenner were taking advantage of the loft, while the Mech sisters and Horace spread out to the identical suite across the hall. It seemed like it was actually pretty late because almost everyone had turned in for the night. I was the only one who'd slept through dinner, but Horace was still up and waiting for word.
"I promised the kid I would wake him up when you were awake, but he's been dead asleep for some time," Horace said, and stretched his arms above his head.
"I'll check up on him, don't worry," I said, and patted my friend on his shoulder. "Thanks for hanging out with him. How are Amaya and Anwar?"
"Both exhausted, but well," he assured me, and then cracked out a huge yawn.
"Get some rest, H, you've done well," I said with another squeeze to his shoulder.
"Glad you're not squalor chow, chief,"
he replied with a tired but roguish grin. And then he left the suite for his own sleeping quarters across the corridor.
"That is something I have been meaning to give your tiny archivist friend. And now that we are out of harm's way, I have only just remembered," Siskern said, and pulled out a stone carving in the shape of an X that was attached to a leather cord from his vest pocket. "Siskorn was the bearer of the library key. Give this to Mr. Jenner."
"Okay, he likes libraries," I shrugged, and tucked the trinket into the pocket of my harem-like pants.
"Dear heart, that key isn't to just any library,"
Shay said with a knowing little grin on her cupid's bow lips. "What do you mean?" I questioned.
"I'll let you figure it out once you tell him,"
she giggled.
"Oh, he is just going to bash his head on the roof when you do. It'll be worth it. You'll see."
"I trust I'm in for some awesome entertainment, so I'll take your word for it,"
I grinned and kissed her temple. Okay, Siskern, lead on. Where are we going to next on this awesome liner of yours?
There is someone I would like you to meet, if you are ready, the raptor man said. And I am sure you are famished, so it is a good thing this person is a fair hand at cooking.
Music to my ears, I sighed, before I kissed my wives goodnight. The former ambassador led me through two more residence cars, a car dedicated to bathing, a sauna-slash-massage parlor, and then to a dining car that had a swanky-looking bar area separated by partitions that reminded me of shoji screens.
Nephew, it's about time!
A portly man with the features of a smallish dinosaur and neck frills waved at Siskern. He was seated at a table over by the large water feature taking up the middle of the room. And when we approached, I saw he was actually standing in the center of the square table like he was behind a hibachi grill. That image was pretty close, because it was clear he was there to prepare something, if the bubbling pot in front of him was anything to go by.
"Sorry to keep you waiting, Uncle," Siskern said as we all sat down.
"No harm, but pour the can of whiskey, won't you?"
the mild-mannered man said, and he stroked his long mustache as his nephew reached for a clay teapot.
"So, Ambassador Brightwood, welcome to Terre."
"Thank you for having me, but you may call me Alex," I said, and extended my hand so we could clasp forearms.
"And you must call me Gris,"
the shorter man insisted with a pointy smile.
"Do sit and partake in this traditional meal we locals like to call Ulp."
The dino man with the neck frills then began ladling us bowls of some fragrant-smelling broth, and when that was done he reached under the counter surrounding him and started pulling out various plates and platters piled high with various ingredients. Some were colorless root vegetables, and a few leafy herb-like things. But mostly it seemed as if the ingredient of choice was all kinds of meats of various slices.
"What my uncle is not telling you is that Ulp is actually a very flavorless dish by outsider standards," Siskern chuckled. "However, he also will not mention how his version is as far removed from the original version as you can get."
"The problem with Terran cuisine is that our people have never learned how to use the wonders of spices to season our food. But fear not, I have committed myself to the noble task of becoming Terre's first and only chef."
The man gave another mild-mannered smile and took a sip of the steaming drink.
"Please, add anything you wish to the broth. Everything should be seasoned well, but there is extra to account for personal taste."
"Thank you, Gris," I said, and then tucked into a delicious meal that reminded me of a Chinese hot pot. The Ulp broth was rich and surprisingly lemony, and the various meats and vegetables added depths of complex flavors when they were added individually. It was neat because, just like hot pot, the myriad of ingredients made it possible to customize the meal exactly to a person's particular tastes. And Gris was right. Everything was seasoned expertly, so I didn't even think about asking for anything to add.
"I am most pleased to see you seem to enjoy this meal," Gris said after we all sat in silence, munching away for a while.
"Sorry." I grinned and wiped my chin free of broth after I slurped up some type of rice-like noodle. "Aside from scrawny screecher meat, this is my first hot meal in quite some time. It's delicious."
"Ha! No need to apologize,"
the stout man laughed, and then pushed one of the small cups toward me.
"Your enthusiasm is the best compliment. You see, I may be the royal sentinel, but I have always dreamed of being a chef."
"What is a royal sentinel?" I asked, as I cupped the steaming drink between my palms.
"Gris is the captain of the Terran Guard at present," Siskern informed me.
"Not quite captain anymore," the older reptile man grunted. "Your father's chamberlain, Molt, is still whispering his deadly poison in my brother's ear."
"Molt,"
Siskern growled low in his chest. "Who is Molt?" I asked.
"He is my father's right-hand man," the raptor man explained. "Molt basically oversees the palace, but in the days where my father's ore sickness caused his mental faculties to decline, he has been able to exert his subtle influence in order to manipulate my father."
It's not subtle when he restricts tithes to the Loas for the third time this season,
Gris growled as his neck frills vibrated slightly, and the sudden fierce look on the older man's face reminded me that underneath the seemingly harmless exterior lay a battle-hardened captain of the guard.
We just had the tithing ceremony. There should be no cause for restrictions,
Siskern huffed in outrage.
And yet,
Gris patted his fuming nephew on the back of his wrist.
Here we are.
The raptor man growled again as his head ridges flared, and he took a sip of the candor whiskey in front of him.
Dark hell. I should have come back a lot sooner.
You came back when you were supposed to,
Gris said.
Besides, this mantle was never meant for your shoulders. It originally belonged to Siskorn, but he is too much like my brother. It was starting to take him in the end, the sickness.
He broke free from it at the very end, I couldn't help but add. He knew his actions may have cost him, and he did everything in his power after that to make up for it.
That soothes my war-weary heart to hear about my fallen nephew,
the reptile elder said with a grateful smile.
If only a lifetime of good intention could change the actions of ill will. Still, I am strengthened to hear he came around before the end.
I'm sorry we had to lose him when we did, I said, and solemnly raised my cup of whiskey in a moment of solidarity. I saw Captain Nemus do something similar on the quarterdeck when he thought no one was looking. With the remaining brandy Horace was able to salvage after the storm, the captain had filled a shot glass, murmured a few private words for his fallen crewmen, and then carefully drank the brandy so there was a little left at the bottom. Then after a moment of silence, he slowly let the last drop of the spirit roll out and fall to the deck below. The gesture had a gravity to it, I figured fit the occasion. So I did the same thing with my small cup of candor whiskey. To Siskorn, I murmured, with my glass held up, and I saw how everyone else copied the gesture. Then as one, we all drank the viscous fermented juice, and when we were done, I let the last orange drop roll off the lip of my cup and splash down on the lacquered table. Gris caught my eye as if he recognized this gesture from somewhere, and he tipped his head.
"It is not all bad,"
the reptile elder said after the heavy moment had passed.
"We still have a regent to fill in for when King Sterig passes, and for the first time a Terran lord of lowish blood is properly in line to take the throne. This fact alone will be our biggest advantage in keeping the peace. I don't know if my nephew informed you of the tenuous political situation we barely avoided."
"Something about a power vacuum?" I asked, as Siskern poured more of that hot whiskey juice into my empty cup.
"Indeed,"
Gris said, and he busied himself by packing a long pipe with fragrant tobacco.
"Had all of the royal family been lost for much longer, the heads of the competing clans would have made a mad and bloody dash for the Asher Lord's title. This is doubly bad because if Lord Loish gets wind of any possible anarchy, it will give him the foothold he needs to start his insurrection. Civil war is likely in that event, which is something I know for a fact Tyr herself will not survive. This is why I have made it my life's work to unite Tyr with the islands, uncle,"
Siskern said in a tone that told me they'd had this argument many times before.
"If a civil war does ever come about, the Upper Terrans will need allies. None of the noble duelists can actually fight due to their generations of inbreeding and laziness. And you and I both know the Loish don't care about the sickness enough to prevent them from using our own steel against us. We need reinforcements. Allies."
"I agree, Tyr herself needs allies, but she must be unified first and foremost,"
Gris said, with all the patience of a saint. "What about the Ascension Accord thing you mentioned before, Siskern?" I asked, as the twisted politics of this island were slowly being revealed layer by layer. "The Lower Terrans want better living conditions, right? What if that's the first step?" The raptor man looked like he wanted to protest at first, but when my words sank in, he snapped his mouth closed.
"The heart of the matter is, if the Lower Terrans ascend, they leave behind the mines," Gris explained to me as he eyed his nephew. "Tyr only has one major export, and that is her steel.
If there is no one left to mine it, or sickness or not, Tyr's economy will collapse.
Well, you can't keep on mining if everyone is dead, which is where this is going to end up if nothing changes, I said bluntly. If prolonged exposure to the ore causes the sickness, then can there be some sort of, I don't know, rotation or something? People mine in shifts so they can take a break and get some fresh air, you know, smell some flowers, avoid insanity.
Are you suggesting the Uppish take turns on these rotations?
Gris asked, with a mild look of surprise on his face, as if I'd just suggested he wear all his mother's clothes while doing the funky chicken. Why not? I challenged. Why should the Uppish benefit from the broken backs of the lower Terrans without lifting a finger?
Because they have grown bloated and lazy, that's why,
was Siskern's churlish interjection.
He is right, Gris said. Over time, it has become the Uppish way not to dirty their hands with things like combat and manual labor. There is also the fact ore sickness is considered a lower-class disease, and to say the Upper Terrans are afraid of it is an understatement. The Royal Council will never go for it.
Okay, so the rotation thing is out. I sighed and leaned back in my chair as I racked my brain for another solution. What is it about the ore that makes people sick, anyways? Is it just a Terran thing?
It is a story as old as time, Gris said, as he puffed out perfect concentric rings with his pipe smoke. Tyr is considered one of the first islands of Aventol, and the people on it have a long history of savagery the Uppish have sought to breed out over the ages. Not too long ago, the connection was made between the ore and the madness. It has been a known fact that if Terrans use steel weapons, they will succumb to the old ways.
And the old ways are, I ventured, even though I knew I was probably not going to like the answer.
Ancient Terrans were so violent and quick to anger or strong emotions, sometimes even their children were casualties if they were in the way, Gris said in a gruff voice. Blood and steel causes the feral fever, and clans were slaughtering clans almost to Terran extinction. It was the humblest of these, Cree Skeros, a humble farmer and maker of fine porak leather whips, who defended the last of his clan and took back Tyr from the violence. His weapon of choice was the whip, and it was mistaken to have magical properties that kept him remarkably clear-headed and rational. But later it was found he was better at fighting and strategizing because the weapon wasn't honed with steel and galvanized with blood.
And that is why you wield the whip, I concluded, as I gave Siskern a look. I always wondered, especially since duelists have to destroy the heart of the demon in order to ash it for good. Even more so if they hope to get a herald core. I always thought your whip was an interesting choice and assumed you used a dagger or something later.
You will find I had a lot to learn under Gavlane about being an Asher once the red skies started to appear,
Siskern chuckled.
My whip was my attempt at taking on a sacred Uppish symbol of their greatest clan leader in order to assuage any who still took umbrage with the origins of my birth. It was an added positive that I grew to enjoy wielding it as well.
You're saying you were pressured by a bunch of bigoted jerks to learn how to fight with a weapon with limited advantages just to please their narrow-mindedness? I'm sorry, but that sounds like another twisted version of trying to oppress you because you're lowish and it's fucked up, I blurted out, before I could think. And then I glanced down into the second empty cup in my hand. When had I finished that? And why had I just blurted all that out like that? I was supposed to be practicing diplomacy, for fuck's sake. Ambassador Fail.
Well, he does not hold back from the truth, does he?
Gris mused, as he eyed me curiously. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to phrase it quite like that, I said, as my cheeks flushed. And I shook my head when the reptile elder offered me more of the dangerous drink. Ha, I think I've had enough, thank you.
You have only consumed 2 cups of the Kanda whiskey, which tells me you keep your emotions at hand for when you need to act on them. Yet they aren't so close to the surface to distract you, Gris said.
And even though my brain was a little buzzy on the surprisingly strong alcohol, I could still pick up on the fact I'd apparently passed some sort of test by drinking the Terran truth juice.
I noticed you did not apologize for the opinion itself, only in the way you said it.
And I'm not going to, I said, just as bluntly as before. But then I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. Fuck, I promise, I'm not trying to be rude.
It is the drink, son, the reptile elder said with a kind smile. Do not fret. I would like you to know I share all of your opinions thus far most ardently, and I now know why my nephew has asked you to come and help us. Your motivations are noble, and you lead with the heart, not just the head.
I will do what I can, I answered somewhat feebly, and rubbed a hand over my stomach. A strange flutter had taken up residence in the pit of my gut, and I reached for the water instead.
I do not need to give you candor whiskey to know that is true, Chris said. Let us table this conversation for now. It is late, and you still need much rest. I, however, did not want to wait another day before I had the chance to thank you for returning my favorite nephew to me. My life is in your debt, Ambassador Brightwood. Alex?
I thanked him again for the meal and hospitality, and even though I still had a few questions, I was grateful we ended things there and excused myself so Siskern could continue to chat with his uncle who had obviously missed him. The timing was good, too, because the strange flutter in my gut had picked up worse than before and turned into a sharp tug the closer I got to the residence cars, and when I entered the corridor where all of us were housed, I suddenly understood where the odd sensation was coming from, or rather, who the tugging sensation was coming from. Instead of going to the door on my right where I knew my wives would be waiting for me in our suite, I turned left to the identical door across from it. Amaya. She was awake, and somehow, she was calling for me.